Life Audio.
Today on Talk About That, John kisses dating goodbye and tells us the one thing not to say in an argument. Meanwhile, I celebrate the inventor of the shopping cart and the Honorable Judge Wapner. Plus a conversation about toxic hindsight and why it's easier to be a critic than a creator. Today's episode is not sponsored by Cranberry Sauce. Much like your extended family, you only want to see us for one meal out of the year. But first, a word from our actual sponsor.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
You never know what we say off air, Johnny, but right now we push record. Let's talk about that.
Sometimes we come on. If we ever come on and we're chuckling already, yeah. Something inappropriate has just occurred.
My wife calls those things you can't tweet.
Oh, that's nice.
There's a lot of things that get said in the driver house between us that, I mean, quite honestly, Johnny, would make me millions. But
we got a little pushback when we posted our – it was a clip from many episodes ago, but we posted it. Our social media team posted it. It was for – we were talking about showing the Goonies to a child, your child.
Yeah.
And how you kind of cringe. You're like, oh, I didn't know Chunk said that. And then – you were like, look, we just have a thing in our household. You were kind of like very grace-filled about it. Like, look, there are words out there. That doesn't mean we have to say the words, but like you can't protect your child from every word within reason. You just, it's a weird thing to wrap your child in bubble wrap the way that we were. And we had so many people, like not so many, but I had a couple people that were like just posting scriptures about like,
let I only
no,
saw
no,
one.
Let no filthy communication come out of your mouth.
And I was just it like, more than one?
It may, I think there might have been two.
But I mean, that feels like
to me, that's an onslaught of online.
So many people. I was like, really?
But you just don't know. Like, are there people who saw that and were like, oh, well, if we let this stand, we have to. That means that we're giving people permission to be their worst selves and just curse a blue streak. So I have to stand up for truth here, and they feel like they have to post a scripture.
Yeah.
Because they're misinterpreting what we were even saying, honestly.
Well, and that's the danger of a clip.
Yeah.
Right, because you're getting 60 seconds, and they're usually doing it.
Because the point was that we were saying, like, we can't believe that this passed muster.
Was this bad, right?
As a kid's movie, these kids have the foulest mouths, and it makes us laugh now that we're like, we got to feel like we got to cover, you got to cover Sadie's ears a little bit, or at least give it context. Right. Like, Sadie, just because, you know, mouth says this doesn't mean you have to say it or whatever. But all that said, it's just interesting to me, like, that the default position is just to be, like, offended or whatever. And I know that gets oversaid. And it's you have a right to be offended. I just also have a right to say, I'm not changing for you. You know?
I don't know. I you know, I added a new description to my Instagram profile that basically says, very few quality conversations actually happen here. So if you want to really hear important views or on important things, go listen to my podcast.
Yeah.
And somebody else did the same. There's another podcast I listened to, and they were talking about that. And they talk about politics a lot and other things. And they were like, look, we're not going to – you can't win just putting out clips or putting out little posts and, and trying to do it all. And so for me, I mean, what I like about what we do here is at least we talk for 45 minutes to an hour about it. And, you know.
Well, we want sound bites, and that's because we have a short attention span. So we want, like, get to the point, like, don't bore us, get to the chorus, was what Tom Petty used to famously say. Don't bore us, get to the chorus.
That's great.
And he had these great hooks in his songs. But being so soundbite-oriented as a generation, and a couple of generations now, has given us the fruit of what we have, which is we have all these pithy things that sometimes have no substance, you can run an entire candidacy on it, some would say, just by being the most catchy person. And so, but also, it's made us, we lack context. Or we like taking things out of context. That's one of the reasons we're so offended, is we can take something out of context and be like, gotcha.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, it's a real bomb drop kind of thing. It's a boom roasted.
And that's not to say if you listen to the whole hour that you wouldn't be like, no, that's how he really feels. Like, sometimes you might be right about me.
Yeah.
That, no, my view, it does differ from your view on things like foul language or whatever. Even though I'm a clean comic, I may have a different, more progressive view on language and culture than you might have. And guess what? That's okay.
Right.
It doesn't mean like one of us is going to heaven and one isn't.
Well, I always feel like that the place of correction.
John, I'm going to heaven. Please tell me I'm going to heaven.
I feel like that correction can only be offered within an invitational relationship. That's something. I forget I was talking to about that. One of our guys on staff. I was like, look, here's the thing. You don't get to correct where you're uninvited.
Okay.
If you want it to work.
Yeah.
You can go do it.
Right.
I mean, look, writing about racism or other things, you know, we try to write Reggie and I out of a place of, this was about our conversations with each other and we're letting everybody else in, you know, if you want to come in. But the bottom line is, the number one rule in counseling, at least on my end, from like a Christian counseling place, is like, in fact, if I'm going to say something that's difficult to hear, I will usually say, hey, is it okay if I give you some observations? Like, I always ask permission.
Yeah.
But if y'all just go barreling in, well, let me tell you what you're doing wrong. And that's what social media is. Right. It's like a whole lot of counseling with no invitation. Yeah. You know, it's just like,
I've not heard that in a long time, but there used to be a thing that it was like, it's the true killer of any like real dialogue. When somebody goes, I'll tell you what your problem is. Exactly. If it starts there, like nothing good ever came from that.
Right.
First of all, what he's about to say is abominable, and how you're going to take it is not going to be like, I can grow from this.
You know? But the other one would be, let me stop you right there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
If you have anything here, let me stop you right there. Well, and that's the, I know we're not to the quote section. Let me see if I can find this. This is so good. I read this today.
This is not John's quote of the week.
This is not John's quote of the week.
This is another, a bonus quote.
Yeah. Basically, the essence of it is somebody who's a good listener is actually just thinking about what they want to say.
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm saying? Like, they're just not paying attention. You think they're a good listener, but we're all kind of just, you know, or we tend to listen to the people that go ahead and verify our pre-existing opinion of something. And so I think, if you can't find a way to listen, and you know, I talked about that at lunch a little bit. I know we don't want to get super deep here, Johnny, at this moment, because, you know, we're only a couple minutes in, but that's what we do here.
Right into the deep end of the pool.
But, you know, if you read, like, I know I was reading this book called The Anatomy of Peace, which is unbelievable, by the Arbinger Institute, and it's worth a read, everybody. You maybe hear me reference it here and there. But basically, like, in most conflicts, what people really want in order to be able to hear what you have to say is some minute level, at least, of validation of what they're saying. At least an acknowledgement.
Yeah.
And if you can't validate anything that they're saying, like, okay, you know what? I hear what you're saying there, and I'm beginning to understand why you feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's like, but to us right now in modern culture, doing that is like accepting it.
Yeah.
It's acquiescing.
You're giving points to the other side, and that can't be done. You have to dig your heels in on your extreme point of view. Because you're giving them points, so you can't ever do that. So to the point where we don't even call out people on our side. That's really the main issue that bothers me so much. We talked about that last week, about grifters within the church. When we see somebody distorting the gospel and using it to just inflame culture or make money or whatever, when you just go, well, we just hope God will be glorified in some way, and I know that that... No, we got to call it. Like, you get exhausted if you do nothing but call out. But I'm saying, like, at some point, you got to go, that's not us.
Right. And that's what's hard, because to some extent, what you allow is what you endorse.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that, and certainly...
That's why I've thought about killing this show so many times. I'm like, John...
Why am I allowing this?
Why... People are going to think John and I agree. I can't let that.
The flip side is, like you said, I mean, you can't spend all of your time. I mean, I've known pastors who literally became online self-proclaimed watchdogs.
Sure.
Like that they spent their time now just – that's why I think social media is not the place for it. They're just taking people down.
Mm-hmm.
They're just perusing what content – they're rarely making content.
Yeah.
They're perusing content that
it's
others
a
are
reaction
making.
Reaction to, yeah.
Right. And they're just like, takedown, boom, roasted. You know what I'm saying? And like,
I thought about that too when I was talking to, we were talking about Caleb, our friend Caleb Edwards, who's great, Caleb Christopher Edwards, and how like he's making these things. And like, I meet so many musicians and songwriters and singers and songwriters that are like, I wish I could do what you do. And it feels so brave to them. And I think it's the opposite. When I think about when I was making music with you, it felt more brave to me because it's like you're putting your real feelings out there, which is what so much of what I do is I'm reacting to culture.
Right.
I'm saying, hey, you see this stupid show on TV, and I can like have a take on it.
Yeah.
But if I was going to make a show, that's putting my heart out there and going, please like my show, knowing that some other comedian hack is going to like make fun of me.
Yeah.
It takes much more bravery to like be yourself and put your emotions out there. Ooh. You know, than to be like, I'm going to do a commentary on this. And that's my entire personality now is commentary on culture.
Ooh, yeah, man. It's tough. And it's one of those.
My job is worthless is what I'm saying, John. And I've got to be stopped.
I always say the hardest voice for me to write in is my own. And that's been a real profound realization in my life as someone who writes in other people's voices. But when it's time, it's not that I don't have things to say. Mm-hmm. It's that I have too many things to say, and I'm not sure which ones should be cut away and which one's going to really make the punch. That's why I really value collaboration and editors and those kinds of things.
Yeah.
But there's something to be said for, in fact, it's crazy. I was talking to an editor, and she said she knew another collaborator that she works with, an editor from a publisher. She said, same thing. They're working on a book with this other writer who's normally a collaborator, mm-hmm. and it's a struggle to because you're so used to helping someone else's ideas go onto the paper versus finding your own, because you are putting yourself out there. I'm less worried about what they're going to say, I think, and just more like I'm just more in my own head with my own stuff than I am with someone else's stuff.
Well, we talked about it last week about being on the right side of history is this new angst that we have because we've seen history play out on television the last 50 years. So it's more visible in our eyes,
right.
And we're so much more aware that we can be on the wrong side of something and then be judged by future generations, and it's a new anxiety that we have.
Yeah.
So yeah, having a hot take on something, you may be like, well, I sold 100,000 books, and then be like, yeah, that was garbage.
Well, you know, there's a great example of that. In the late 90s, early 2000s, I forget the exact year, but there was a book called I Kissed Daddy Goodbye by Josh Harris.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it was a sensation. Now, I remember reading it and throwing it against the wall because it was so frustrating for me.
Yeah,
because it felt like what I needed to do, but I didn't know how to do. It's an anti-dating culture.
Well, it played into everything that you hated about yourself.
Right.
It played up your self-loathing.
And where I was struggling with purity and other things, and I think his heart was right, and I think that the message was. It, like you said, there was a moment in time it was received very strongly because it was reactionary to things that teenagers were struggling with. But now,
you want to explain the book a little bit to people who don't know that. Remember that was the height of purity culture.
I think that's worth it.
Dating was like, we can come back to it.
Yeah, we need to come back to it. Let's hear for just a few moments.
It's a cliffhanger.
Yeah,
I like this.
I like it. A word from a few of our sponsors. So yeah, I Kissed Dating Goodbye was basically an anti-cultural or conventional dating.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically saying that the ways of God are not aligned with the ways of the modern way
like
of dating.
Serial dating.
Right.
You just go out dating until you find a mate. Yeah.
So you should only date somebody if they're marriage material and if you're moving towards marriage, basically. So it's like a courting.
Every frivolous date that you have take something out of you a little bit, like you're giving away a piece of yourself, it felt like.
And again, there's some validity to the idea that, especially on a purity line or specifically on giving your heart so fully to the point that you're not recognizing what season of life you're in.
Right. And now we have the other pendulum swing where it's tender and it's almost like we don't revere dating relationships enough. It's just a whatever. It's just a hookup culture.
Exactly. And I think that's what he was trying to speak against. And I feel bad for the guy. You know, he went on to be a pastor and now he has renounced the book because he felt like it did more damage
than
good.
And renounced Christianity.
And he has renounced faith in the manner that he wants, listened to interviews with him, in the manner that he once promoted it, that right now he considered himself a person who is not on board for where faith is at the moment. But he didn't like, you could tell he was still in his, almost like he was back to being a seeker, or probably right. in his life was a seeker for the first time in his life. But I think that you go, it's easy to go, well, yeah, but then he shouldn't have written that book. And, you know, if you read Jesus and John Wayne, which I think is a great read, those kinds of things are referenced in there. And and I'm not saying how in the world we can find a way to go, hey, the guy, I think, was pretty, you know, pure-hearted at the moment for what he was trying to do.
Well, and you probably had a lot of publishers along the way who were super conservative and thought, this guy is young and he's saying the things in the youth language in a way that, but he's promoting a very old idea. In other words, we're scared to death of our kids dating.
Right.
Here's this young guy that's saying, like, we need to get back to, like, a biblical mindset, and this is what that looks like.
Exactly.
And so they threw money at him.
Well, yeah.
So then you gotta, then you're dealing with that of, like, you know, I'm getting all these offers, I'm getting these advances.
And it certainly, yeah, it certainly spoke the language of what they were needing. And I think a language that they needed to hear. That's what's hard. Everything is political science. Like, we think of everything. We love throwing the word fascist right now, or socialist, right?
Right.
But there, I remember a professor teaching about the differences between radicalism and reactionaryism.
Okay.
And fascism would be considered reactionaryism. And it's funny because fascism, if you think of Nazi Germany or whatever, is based upon you reacting to a villain. Yeah. Or you reacting, specifically Germany is reacting to the armistice that ended World War I, that felt like that they were poorly treated over the course of those, that time. And World War II is really an extension of World War I, because they just felt like they were really, really punished to an nth degree for the First World War. And so when the Depression hits globally, then Hitler is able to really kind of, you know, play upon the fears of the people. And some of those things were real, that the German people had, had gone through a lot of hardship because of a war that happened to their generation, you know, 20 years before or so. And so, like, but it's one of those, it's not about us doing something new. It's about us reacting to something old, or someone that's mistreated you, or is a threat to mistreat you again because they've proven themselves to be as such.
Yeah.
But then socialism on the other side, I mean, they do the same thing. They create enemies. They create somebody to be afraid of. But it's more about progressive. Like, hey, you're not getting what you deserve. And so, therefore, if we move forward, a radical shift forward, a progressive shift forward, we can all get what we want.
Right.
Right. So, but it's less about, they both have fear mongering in it. But I just think, you know, Christian culture, it's easy for us to look back. And I'm not defending it, but I think there has to be some nuance to go, well, hey, we didn't have all the knowledge necessarily that we had then. And again, I'm really struggling saying this, because I struggle to feel like I'm letting bad things that shouldn't be connected to the church or to Christ off the hook.
Yeah.
And that's not what I mean. Like, surely there has to be a way in between to go, hey, for that moment in time, that made sense to them.
But for the light that we had, it's hard to give grace to something like that. Because you go, like, even when you look back at the Falwell days and all the stuff, the moral majority, the stuff that I think is super regrettable and gave us the moment that we're in now in Christian evangelicalism, American evangelicalism, that this moment is a comeuppance for those moments where we took the reins of political power and we started kind of throwing our weight around the room. And now we're getting this, like, this voting block that you can't get elected without us. And we're in the pocket of the far right, no matter what the morality of the candidate is. It's a moment that a lot of Christians are struggling with, and they feel a strange pull. They feel a lot of tension there, and I'm among those people. But even then, it's hard for me to just be like, this was a calculated evil moment. I think it's hard. It's hard to give those folks grace, but it is what it is. It just, you know, who knows what they were really grasping at? Maybe a lot of those people thought they were doing the right thing at the time.
Well, and I know Billy Graham and Jesus and John Wayne has talked about, and I think she even gives a little bit of, grace is a strong word, but some context.
Yeah.
That I think for Billy Graham, it made sense to him where he was, that, wow, think of how many more people we could reach, how much better the country would be if Christians were civically empowered.
Yeah.
Right. Like, they really began. I mean, it kind of makes sense in some ways that would be great, right? We all are involved in government, but then the marrying of the politics to religion. Because again, if you marry two kingdoms, we try to marry some sort of other ideological kingdom with the kingdom of God. Only one can survive.
Yeah.
You know, and so you're either going to push out God's kingdom principles unintentionally, thinking that you were trying to amplify them, or God's kingdom is always going to prevail. I just mean, though, you can push yourself out of the kingdom principles. You can't push the principles out because they're always there. But it's an interesting thought, Johnny. And you know what? I think it's a great moment for us to, we got a new segment.
Oh, that's right.
We're doing new things around here.
John's quote of the week.
And every week right now, I'm working on what the intro song is going to be. So maybe we need you listeners to kind of chime in.
Oh, it's the audition process.
Yeah, you never know what might be. So I'm going to try something. Let's go ahead and say, guys, let's get to our quote of the week. That did nothing.
John, this is so anticlimactic.
They heard it, but you and I didn't hear it.
Oh, so, did they? Okay.
But you need to know what it was, probably.
Well, no,
you?
It's fine. I mean, I can just say it was probably lame. This is some royalty-free nonsense that John found online, so he's been auditioning them one after another.
On. Quote of the week is actually from my friend, John Onwuchekwa.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, used to be a pastor. Well, he no longer pastors in Atlanta, but he pastored for years there, and now he is the, don't get this wrong, I believe the content director for Christianity Today, but... got to meet John when we were working on Not So Black and White, and he was just so kind to us and gave us an amazing sort of endorsement for me and Reggie's work and spoke into the life. But he's just doing a lot of amazing things, especially on grief.
Okay.
And he talks a lot about grief. So John Onwuchekwa was a great follow and a great read. He's got some great books out there as well. But he said this one time, and maybe it's not his, but this is where it came from. But he says that pastors aren't meant to stand between you and God. Pastors exist to make sure nothing else does, which I just thought was like I know from a Protestant viewpoint, and again, I just got to speak to some wonderful folks in an Episcopal church, and their pastors are called priests, right? Uh-huh. And so you think of priests as this go-between.
Right, a mediator.
Yeah. But regardless of what you call it or what your structure is, there really is this feeling that we've been trying to address in church that there's this deal between the church leaders who get paid to do this, the vocational ministry people, you know, and then the attenders, even to the point that we have a term called regular attender now that's common in church culture.
Yeah.
And it basically just says that, you know, hey, you show up every week and I'll make a sermon and, you know, we'll entertain your children and make a good experience for you. And we'll both just keep telling each other that we're doing what Jesus wants, right? As opposed to like living this honest life. And that's a little cheeky, I think, way to say it. I mean, I think there's more to it than that.
Yeah.
But you can. I've lived my life, and that's part of what I'm recovery from and what I repent of a lot to our church, you know, feeling like one of the experts, feeling that they really need me or they're not going to get this.
Yeah, that's the thing I think we grew up with in our upbringing was like that we didn't call them priests, but there was this idea that the anointed one was you can't get where you want to be with God without me.
Right.
I am a mediator of sorts. Even though we're preaching that Jesus is the mediator.
Right.
You also need me because I have this secret handshake with him that you could never have.
Hmm.
So we really weren't really raised with that whole priesthood of the believer thing. We were kind of more, even though it was in the Bible that we read, but the culture was different. The culture said, like we talked about that when I made the joke at the mega church, you know, I make these jokes at mega churches and about the pastor and I'll tease the pastor. And part of that's a little bit of a test. I want to see what kind of culture is there. If a pastor can laugh at himself, the church needs to see you laughing at yourself, pastor.
Yeah.
Let me just say that. If you are somebody that everybody's going to clutch their pearls, if anybody ever brings up your name and makes a joke because you're so thin-skinned, you have a toxic culture.
Yeah. No, it's true. And only you can change that.
Yeah.
Like, again, you can't. That has to be top down. Like, you can't. If you have that sort of culture, if someone from the grassroots level tries to address that with you, then it'll just blow up in everyone's face every time.
Yeah.
It has to be a moment of humility, a moment that you come to grips with yourself on, and then invite, like I said, invite. It's all about inviting. And remind me of another quote, by the way, from A.W. Tozier.
John,
I know,
it's too many.
I know, I'm sorry. But he says, okay, that modern religion focuses upon filling churches with people. The true gospel emphasizes filling people with God.
Yeah.
I mean, that's that same kind of thing. Like, what's... I'm not here, actually, and that's one of my main prayers now, even as a dad, is, and it sounds so preachy and so, like, cliche, but, like, I'm really, my greatest fear now is that, not that I'm going to say something necessarily wrong or not show up and be the best version that I needed to be for myself, is that I'm going to get in the way.
Yeah.
That God was actually doing work, and me trying to do whatever I was trying to do was in the way and not where it should have been.
Yeah, and when I've preached on Sunday mornings, which is rare, I do it probably five times a year, but one of the things I share is from the story, I think it's in Luke chapter 4 or 6. It's about the person they brought to Jesus on the mat, and they had to tear the roof off.
Right.
And I'd read that story so many times, and I read it in a translation, I think it was New American or something, and it was a New American Standard, but it was basically, it said, the religious law keepers were gathered tightly around Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And I never really saw that part of it. So the people who were literally the reason the roof had to be torn off were the people that thought that they were the closest to Jesus, but really they were in the way of somebody that needed a healing.
Yeah, wow.
The guy couldn't get through that needed to get to Jesus. So somebody else, and so I kind of tell that story and I go, I used to be these people that were, I thought I was close to Jesus, I was around you, but I was just a religious law keeper. And then somebody showed me one day that I was actually lame and I needed to be, you know, lowered down to Jesus.
Wow.
And now I'm a guy that was lowered down to Jesus and got healed, and now I tear the roof off for other people. So it's like you're one of those three people in the story.
Yeah.
You know, if you're a church person, if you've been going to church your whole life like we have, like you're one of those three people. You know, you've been through all three, hopefully. And so I don't know, I think there's something to that. Like we forget who we are in the story sometimes.
That's good stuff. How much is it going to cost to get you in here to preach that?
I've given it all away.
No, I love that. I mean, it reminds me, Reggie tells a story similarly in Not So Black and White of the woman at the well, and how there's all these parentheses in there where in the story that he's with his disciples and they're all, you know, they're hungry,
mm-hmm.
and he sends them away. And there's all these little parentheses of like, because the Jews had no dealings with Samaritans. And Reggie always asks, like, hey, when it comes to specifically racism, are you the kind of disciple that's going to go talk to the woman at the well, or are you the kind of disciple that he has to send away so that you don't get in the way of what he wants to do?
Yeah.
Because he knew they couldn't handle what he was about to do.
Right.
She couldn't handle it. She was like, what are you doing? Like, we don't do this, you know?
Uh-huh.
And so I want to be the kind, Johnny, that doesn't get sent away. I don't want to stand between people. I want to make sure that nothing else does. And, guys, that was our quote of the week. Yeah. Well, you heard it that time.
Yeah, little hi-hats on it. Little jazz, smooth jazz.
Smooth jazz.
John, let's end the show like we always do with our This Week in History. We call it Talk About Then. John, born this week, 1919, died in 2017, sadly. Joseph Wapner. Do you know who
Judge Wapner?
Judge Wapner, American judge, TV personality. He presided over the People's Court 1981 to 93. It was the first of the arbitration-based reality court shows, which now, you know, very ubiquitous.
That had to be very early reality television.
I mean, I don't even know if you would. Yeah, it was early reality TV. You would, because, I mean, I guess it was curated in that it was edited, but it was a real people. We assume, right? Or were these dramatizations? I don't know. I think they were real people.
Yeah.
So they'd come on and they'd go, look, this is small claims. It wasn't like thousands and thousands of dollars usually. But it was like, hey, this guy broke my whatever swing set. And, you know, the HOA got involved and we're mad. But we're going to let Judge Wapner decide it on TV.
Wow.
My favorite part of the People's Court is the guy at the end who, I remember his name, John.
No way.
His name was Doug Llewellyn. Doug Llewellyn is the guy who interviewed the people at the end, and he would go like, our court is now in session, and he would kick to Judge Wapner.
Yeah.
And then at the end, he'd be like, what do you think? And then the guy who lost would just be so – it was like one of the first things of like the players in the NFL have a contract. They get millions of dollars. But when you lose the game, you have to go answer to the press. And you just have to bite your teeth and, you know, bite your tongue and do it.
Because, you know, you're at your moment of greatest, like, disappointment. And
they go, why do you think you did that? That fumble. How did you feel right before you fumbled? And
like some guy that couldn't run the length of the football field is asking
like,
you,
but
right?
But, like, here's a guy who had to pay $80 for a broken swing set, and he has to Doug Llewellyn's smug face with a microphone getting in there and be like, what do you think about the judges? And you got to do it. And I wonder what they made. Like, I'd love to research it more. Like, what did you make? You have to, they had to pay you for going on TV, or was it just like literally like, I think I'm going to be famous if I go on?
I imagine what you got was no court costs.
Oh, that's probably true.
You know what I'm saying? So you probably were saving money, get to handle it, and now
but
this
then,
is
like,
how
you're the guy that, ugh.
Yeah, but
it's just weird. And they'd always give the case some cheeky name. You know,
right.
This is the case of the.
I wish you had a cheeky
swing
something.
Low, sweet chariot, or whatever.
There we go.
It was a broken swing set.
And a broken chariot. So, I've seen it. I've seen it just the
I've
once.
I've seen it 100 times. John, this one from history. It's another famous, infamous Dan Quayle quote. We've had a few of these on the show. He was known for his verbal gaffes, which in the old days were kind of killers politically. They're like, this guy's in office. What a dummy. Now it's like, we don't care at all.
No.
We can people say the craziest stuff and they get away with it. It's kind of it's fat. Dan Quayle must be somewhere going, "Seriously? I spelled potato wrong, I was done." Meanwhile, this guy's like dropping F-bombs in a city council meeting. He's just like full steam ahead to his presidential candidacy. Okay. Dan Quayle, November 15th, 1991, in a speech to the Christian Coalition, US Vice President Dan Quayle declared, "My friends, no matter how rough the road may be, We can, and we will never, never surrender to what is right." He had him right up to the end.
Oh,
the last,
is so
right
my,
up to the last word. It is. It's very Michael
is
Scott.
Is Michael Scott getting called in by what's the CFO's name?
I can't remember.
Oh shoot! And he calls him in his office, like, and he thinks he's in trouble, and he's like, "Michael, I want you to. Here's the deal. Your sales." You're the only branch that's been profitable. Can you tell me your secret? And he looks around. He's like, "Well, you know, I always, in every situation, always try to never, and I mean never, I mean not if." And he just goes on, and he does this for like 30 seconds, and they flip over to the little interview, and he's like, "Sometimes I just start a sentence, and I don't have any idea where it's going."
Yeah, I think that's what happened. Probably is. That's why we got the teleprompters now. John, this will be a good one. It's from U.S. history, which you should know this.
David Wallace. Sorry, that was the name of the CFO.
David Wallace.
Sorry,
do you know? Yeah. Inventor of the Suckit. Do you know who John Hansen is from U.S. history?
Not from the band Hansen.
He died November of 1783. This week in 1783. He was an American statesman. He was the first president of the U.S. Congress assembled.
Oh, yeah.
Because of this, he is sometimes called what, John? The first president of the U.S. By some people, they refer to him as the first president.
I am pretty certain that I just saw his house in Colonial Williamsburg.
Really?
But he died, and so he's not. There was a whole thing on him and how important.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're saying if he hadn't died. He'd be really old if he hadn't died.
What year
John.
Did he die?
He died in 1783. This week, 1783.
So that's it. So that's the deal. Like, they say that he would be remembered because he was so important.
Uh-huh.
But he wasn't there for the Constitutional Convention and stuff because he'd already passed.
Yeah.
But he was so key. Like, people, he helped. Yeah, that's crazy.
The U.S. Congress assembled. He was the president of the first U.S. Congress. And so, yeah, he's sometimes referred to. So, but he's not even in any of the founder conversations.
Nope.
Really? I don't know. I didn't know who he was.
No, and that's the deal.
I thought John Hansen was the guy from To Catch a Predator. Anyway, okay, so inventor of the shopping cart, John, finally. This week, born 1898, Sylvan Nathan Goldman. He was an American businessman. He invented the shopping cart in 1937.
Wow.
He had noticed the customers quit shopping when their handheld baskets became full. His first cart was essentially a folding chair with wheels and baskets attached. That's kind of a rudimentary design. The carts were initially a flop as shoppers were reluctant to use them. As you can see, that would be a problem, as you can imagine. Men found them effeminate. There we go. And women thought them too much like a baby carriage. So Goldman hired both male and female models to shop with them. So he created a little bit of a sociological experiment. Eventually, The folding carts became extremely popular, and Golden became a multimillionaire by collecting a royalty on every folding design shopping cart in the United States. So he must have just sat on the patents as they came out. He also invented nested shopping carts, where the carts are pushed inside of each other for storage. So the ones we still see today, where the thing back flips up and they... That guy... So that's kind of a cool... It's an American success story.
Was he born today? Or?
He was born this week, 1898, John.
Wow.
But he didn't invent his key invention until 1937, so he was almost 40.
Wow, that's
old. So that just shows, hey, man, if you're up there and you're like...
You're telling me I still have hope.
Well, not you. You're mid-40s.
Yeah, you're right.
You should have...
Should have already done something by now.
Yeah. You need to pull it together.
That's, I think you're...
What about a drone?
Is
that
you
shops?
Or my inner critic? I can't tell.
That's, well, look, same voice probably.
What if my inner critic spoke in Johnny W.'s voice? That would be about right.
No, I don't know.
Well, that was good history today, Johnny.
What do you think?
I think so.
A little bit of everything.
Informative, entertaining, well done.
Maybe you're out there and you're making gaffes on a daily basis.
Right.
Just know that history says it's a safe space for you now.
Absolutely. There's
no
way.
Go out there and just say whatever you want with impunity, because maybe you're going to invent a shopping cart device.
Or you'll be cited on Talk About That.
Yeah.
Someday we'll not make fun of you. We'll laugh with you.
Laugh with.
Right.
We always laugh with. It's very supportive here.
It's very supportive. You know, speaking of supportive.
Mm-hmm. If you'd like to support the show, go to talkaboutthatpodcast.com. Upper right corner, there's a button that says support. Mm. That's how you get ad-free content.
It can't be any clearer.
And become a patron. Lower right is where you can send us a little note. If you want to know more about us, if you want to send us a note of encouragement, just a diatribe. Or some kind of a manifesto against the show, you can send that there as well.
Yeah.
We'd love to read those on the air.
Or just make some stupid joke. Send that to trash. Talk about that podcast.
Send that straight to our trash folder.
Yeah, you should also check out Johnny W.'s website, JONNIEW.com.
New tour dates going up every week. I got a great show coming up in South Georgia, November 29th. That's a ticketed event at the Muse Theater with Ed Wiley. December 27th. Another holiday weekend where you might already be sick of your family. Come see me at Zany's Comedy Club, Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah.
Go to Amazon.com, John. That's where you can find the elaborate and articulate works of one John C. Driver.
Yeah. I don't, we'll talk another time about it. I don't think I like my writing very much, but you guys should.
Of course, you have great writing.
I don't know.
Come on.
I have this moment where I was like, the other day, I was like, how am I doing this? I was volleying things back and forth with actual real editors who know what they're doing. I was like, do they have any idea? This is not imposter syndrome. Like, I didn't train for this.
You are an imposter.
Yeah. Huh. And it's been going a while now. So I guess at this point.
If you buy John's books, you can keep it going.
That's right. Can you please help?
Please sustain my imposter syndrome.
If you haven't seen Suits, it's about a guy who is
it's an imposter.
Working as a lawyer, but he's really good at it because he can memorize anything, but he never actually went to law school. They're wondering if it's ever
Didn't they have
come
a
out.
Scene like that in Space Cowboys where they're all too old to go into space? I think Clint Eastwood, James Garner, a bunch of old guys. And the one guy, they were old astronauts, I think, and they want to go back for another mission.
Right.
It's one of those the Earth is ending probably things. And they need people who are former astronauts, but these guys are way too old. And the one guy gets in, he passed the vision test because he memorized the answers of the guy who had good vision before him. He remembers, E4, 5, 6, or ELP, whatever. I don't know. Do they put numbers on the vision chart?
No, I don't.
My eyes are bad, John. I'm not going to. I'm seeing numbers and squigglies.
Johnny's like reading off hieroglyphic
signs. The symbol for pi.
Yeah. But anyway, check out. Yeah, I appreciate that, Johnny. That was, I know I just.
Just don't doubt yourself.
Stopped all the readers from wanting to go.
Listen, hey, why don't you take it easy on my buddy John? He's a good man.
I appreciate that.
Okay.
Hey, guys, leave us a review wherever you are listening to podcasts, especially on Apple.
Written reviews help people find the show.
They do. And thanks to all of you who have. It really has helped. And we've had a lot more listeners in the last few months. So appreciate that. Appreciate all that you guys do every week to join us here on
Talk About That.
Rejoice always. Pray without ceasing. Give thanks in all circumstances. God invites us to cultivate thankful hearts by turning our eyes toward Him in good times and bad.
To listen to more Abide Christian Meditations, just go to lifeaudio.com or search your favorite podcast app for Abide Christian Meditation. You can also download the Abide app for more biblical meditations at abide.com.